Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
I don't ever want to be in a position of needing to initiate secretarial action on one of the council's fishery management plans for any reason.
A federal council fails to choose a new fishing plan for Cook Inlet. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, April 10th. Good evening, I'm Wesley Early. Also tonight, troopers warn Mat-Su residents after several fentanyl-related overdose deaths.
Right now it is extremely dangerous due to this high potency of these illegal drugs that are circulating in the Mat-Su Valley.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The future looks bright because the University of Alaska is on a mission to empower Alaska. From drone piloting to vital climate research to critical mining solutions, the University of Alaska's 3 universities and their community campuses shape the jobs and careers that fuel the economy, creating a more empowered Alaska for all. Learn more at empower.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
A federal council made the unprecedented decision to not choose a new fishing management plan for the Cook Inlet commercial salmon fishery last week after it said it was left with no good options on a tight court-ordered timeline. That means management of the fishery will likely fall to the federal government, which council members and local fishermen warn could severely limit the fishery. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
At its meeting last week in Anchorage, the North Pacific Fishery Management Council was supposed to choose between several potential management plans for the Upper Cook Inlet commercial salmon fishery. The council manages fishing in Alaska's federal waters, which start 3 miles offshore. But members of the council, audibly frustrated, said none of the options before them were viable. Andy Mesereau is a charter boat captain out of Seward who sits on the council.
The court-mandated timeline has forced this council into a box that we find ourselves in. For these reasons, I can't support any of the alternatives before us today, and I hope the public notes that fisheries management on a tight court-mandated timeline does not allow us to do our best work.
The council has been trying to figure out what to do with the fishery for years, following a lawsuit from the United Cook Inlet Drift Association over management of the fishery. In 2020, in response, the council voted to close a large swath of Upper Cook Inlet to commercial salmon fishing altogether, that areas where drift fishermen say they catch a majority of their fish. And Kenai Peninsula fishermen and advocates showed up in mass to the 2020 meeting to protest the closure. UCEDA sued once again to overturn the decision, and the court sided with them last June. The state reopened the fishery just as the 2022 season was starting up. That was a temporary fix. At its meeting this month, the council was supposed to choose a new fishery management plan, or FMP. It's under court order to have a plan in place by 2024. Only a few fishermen showed up to the meeting to testify this time. One of them was Eric Hipsch, who lives in Kasilof and is a vice president of UCEDA.
Writing a legal FMP amendment for the Upper Cook Inlet salmon fishery does not have to be this difficult.
He asked the council to pass an amended version of Alternative 2, which would have set up a system of co-management between the states and the feds. But at the meeting, the state once again said it refused to co-manage the fishery with the federal government, rendering that option unviable. Here's Rachel Baker, representing the state of Alaska.
The state of Alaska is not willing to accept delegated management authority for the Cook Inlet salmon fishery in the EEZ under the conditions specified in Alternative 2.
Two other options, to do nothing or close the fishery down completely again, were rendered illegal by the courts, so the council said it couldn't pick those either. The final option, known as Alternative 3, delegates management of the fishery to the federal government. John Kurland is a regional administrator with NOAA Fisheries, the national agency that works with the council to set fisheries policy. He tried and failed to get the council to choose that alternative.
We have been in a very difficult position on this issue. And I don't ever want to be in a position of needing to initiate secretarial action on one of the council's fishery management plans for any reason. So this is really unfortunate.
Advisory panels to the council said both alternatives could result in more restrictive management of the fishery. They said Alternative 3, in particular, would require federal managers to set up a system of federal salmon management that they don't already have in place. Councilmember Bill Twight says the state already has a system that's well tailored to the nuances of salmon.
The same cannot be said of the federal system.
He says the alternative would likely increase costs to the fishery and reduce revenues.
That's so contrary to what the initial proponents of this action were expecting. That's not fair to them. That's not right.
Kurland couldn't get any support on his motion. He said to comply with the court's order, he'd have to move forward with implementing that alternative anyway. Hibbs says the alternative as written violates the federal standards put forth in federal fisheries law because it sets catch limits and puts dates on fishing closures, for example. He says fishery decisions are sometimes made on an hourly basis, that the fishery needs to be flexible to account for run timing.
It's clear to most people that Alternative 3 is designed to fail, or at least create a failed fishery.
He says he doesn't expect the alternative to hold up in court. In the meantime, in the absence of any decision from the council, it heads to the feds for approval. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
The North Pacific Fishery Management Council is meeting in Anchorage through tomorrow. Meanwhile, a Ketchikan resident's request to have a book removed from the local library's shelves will face a public hearing on Wednesday. KRBD's Eric Stone has more.
The book in question is Let's Talk About It, The Teen's Guide to Sex, Relationships, and Being Human by Erica Moen and Matthew Nolan. Ketchikan resident Tanya Hedlund submitted the request to the library earlier this year asking for the book to be pulled, citing what she describes as sexually explicit material. In her request to remove the book, Hedlund said the book, quote, belongs in an adult bookstore. She objected to portions of the book discussing anal sex, sexting, and pornography, along with illustrations of sex acts. Hedlund indicated in the February 10th request that she had not read the entire book, but had seen pictures of some of the book's pages. Random House, the publisher of the 240-page graphic novel, pitches it as a resource for teens to learn more about themselves, their identities, and their bodies. The request to pull the book from the library's teen nonfiction section first went to the library's head of children's services, Amy Topfer. She wrote Hedlund a letter declining to pull the book. She said the library encourages parents to accompany their children to the library to select material that they feel is appropriate for their family. Topfer also pointed to reviews praising the book. The School Library Journal, a trade publication for librarians, called it, quote, real talk about relationships and sex. Hedlund appealed to Ketchikan Public Library Director Pat Tully, who also declined to remove the book. Tully said the library's collections serve a wide range of interests and beliefs in an effort to serve Ketchikan's diverse community. She said material that some find offensive might be useful and appropriate for others. Hedlund appealed again, this time to the Ketchikan Public Library Advisory Board. The board is scheduled to hold a public hearing on the request on Wednesday. After taking comments, the board is expected to discuss the request to pull the book. The board may also hold a non-binding vote on a recommended course of action, according to Tully. The advisory board meeting is scheduled for 6 p.m. Wednesday. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
Three Wasilla overdose deaths in less than 24 hours last week have the state warning residents about a batch of illegal drugs likely containing fentanyl. Alaska State Troopers say the drugs are circulating in the Matanuska-Susitna borough and have been linked to nearly a dozen overdoses within just 7 days. Trooper spokesman Austin McDaniel says Wasilla residents Valerie Goodwin, Jerry Carr, and Carla Jester were found dead overnight Thursday at two local homes.
And at this time, we believe that fentanyl was largely the culprit in the deaths and overdose events.
Fentanyl has become a major public health issue across the state, with some distributed as counterfeit blue Oxycontin pills. An Anchorage man was sentenced last month to 21 years in federal prison for helping to distribute fentanyl from a Mexican drug ring in Alaska. McDaniel declined to say what drugs from the suspect batch may look like or where they may have come from. He emphasized that when it comes to using illegal drugs, no batch is safe.
Right now, it is extremely dangerous due to this high potency of these illegal drugs that are circulating in the Matsu Valley.
Troopers are asking anyone with tips on Matsu drug trafficking to call them at 907-352-5401. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, elementary students learn to ice fish in Nome.
It's important to me because I like to share and I like to catch fish.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
You know that eating fruits and vegetables supports good health, but did you also know that frozen and canned produce offers the same health benefits as fresh? It's true. Whether fresh, frozen, canned, or from the land, eating fruits and veggies can lead to a long and healthy life. So when it comes to getting the fruits and veggies you need to stay healthy, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by Snap.
Last week, the Anchorage School Board voted to revoke the charter of Family Partnership Charter School. The district now takes control of the homeschool program after the 6-1 vote. For years, the district tried to help the school fix long-standing dysfunction on its policy committee. Family Partnership Charter School is the oldest and largest charter school in Anchorage. It opened in 1997 and is one of two charter schools within the district that also serves as a homeschool program. At last week's meeting, dozens of current and former students, parents, teachers, and administrators testified in favor of keeping the charter. Teresa Hintze is the parent of a Family Partnership student and asked the board not to revoke the charter.
Revoking the charter would rob current and future students of the ability to find their own unique and individual path through the educational landscape. I implore the members of the board to try and recognize that taking the extreme action of revoking Family Partnership's charter is detrimental to every entity in the Anchorage School District.
Many people who testified shared fears that removing the policy committee and dissolving the charter would fundamentally change the school. However, the district administration noted that the only meaningful difference is dissolving the academic policy committee, which is meant to govern the school. Instead, the school will be guided by an academic advisory council. The Alaska Association of School Boards previously attempted to provide guidance to the committee, but soon withdrew their support. The district listed years of instances of infighting and interference with the principal's operation of the school, violation of state law by purchasing religious material with state funds, as well as breaches of the charter and other policies. Board member Andy Holloman discussed the role of the Academic Policy Committee.
You have to have a functioning Academic Policy Committee to be a charter school, and you don't. And we're not able to step in and fix that. We can't fire members of the Academic Policy Committee. We can't select new ones. We can't tell them what to do. All those things would violate the agreement as it exists. Unfortunately, we have very few tools, and we're making use, unfortunately, of one of the only ones we have.
Before the vote to revoke the charter, the board passed an amendment to ensure all Family Partnership Charter School funds would remain in their own separate account, create a parent-led advisory council, and prevent changes to the current student allotments. Eight other charter schools remain available to ASD students. Meanwhile, Alaska drivers will have more time to swap out their studded tires this spring. On Wednesday, state officials pushed back the removal deadline by 2 weeks due to heavy winter snowfall. May 15th is the new deadline for Anchorage and all other communities north of 60 degrees latitude, which is around Seward. May 1st is now the deadline for southern areas of the state, including Kodiak and Southeast Alaska. In a statement announcing the extension, Public Safety Commissioner James Cockrell said that heavy snow means the ice season has extended well into April. Anchorage is still dealing with snow and berms built up during a trio of December storms with heavy snowfall since then. The municipality also extended its deadline last week to match the state's. And snow fell on a wide swath of South Central Alaska this past weekend, with more than 8 inches around Anchorage and around 5 inches in the Matsu Borough. That's brought this year's winter precipitation to more than 100 inches in Anchorage. National Weather Service meteorologist Brian Brettschneider joins us for our Ask a Climatologist segment and says this weekend has led to a record amount of snowpack this late in the season in the city. While the month of April may bring to mind spring weather, or at the very least, ice breakup, Brettschneider says in Alaska, it can be hit or miss.
We've had some really big April snow months, and we've had Aprils with practically no snow. So it's really kind of one extreme or the other. We're already about 8 inches for the month, but that doesn't even put us into the top 15 snowiest Aprils. So even though people are kind of mentally over with winter in many cases, April snow is not a certainty every year, but it shouldn't be a surprise.
And you note that this snow is an unprecedented and cold weather this time of year is pretty normal, but you've noted that the combination is pretty rare. You know, can you explain what that combination of really cold and lots of snow sort of
creates for April?
Well, typically April snow occurs right around the freezing mark. And so it's usually pretty wet, sloppy snow. This snow that Anchorage received the last few days occurred mostly with temperatures in the teens. And so it was very light, what we call low density snow, was very fluffy, high ratios. So if you squeeze out the water, it actually wasn't a lot, but because it was so fluffy, it really piled up.
Another thing that's notable is how much snow is still on the ground. You know, how does that compare to other years?
Well, for this date, I mean, even before today, we were already at a record snow depth for this late in the season. So we started the day at 27 inches. But now, as we're recording, we're up to 31 inches, which is a monthly record. So we've never had this much snow on the ground at any time in the month of April, much less, you know, a third of the way through the month.
And, you know, South Central's really snowy. What's the rest of the state looking like?
You know, for the western part of the state, this is really a historic cold snap. Nome recorded their lowest April temperature on record in any year. Kotzebue has set 4 or 5 record daily lows. McGrath has. Bethel, King Salmon, Anchorage have set record low high temperatures, so coldest high temperatures. And day after day, so it's been really remarkable, the intensity and the duration. For some of these locations, this is the coldest start to any April on record. And these are some long periods of record. And that has tangible impacts, say, on when river breakup is going to occur. There's kind of a lot of hand-wringing about what this breakup season is going to be like. It's already delayed, and it might be delayed for a few days, maybe even longer than that. So, what kind of impacts does that have for community travel and potential flooding when the inevitable breakup does come? So, this cold is really, really quite remarkable and persistent and intense. So, and in fact, Nome, their coldest temperature of the entire season occurred this month in April, and that had never occurred before. Same with Kotzebue, their coldest month of this winter in April. This is the latest that's ever occurred. So we should keep our friends along the West Coast in mind.
This last burst of snow pushed Anchorage to over 100 inches of total snowfall this winter. Even the deadline to remove snow tires got extended this year because of the heavy winter. You know, how does this snow total stack up to sort of years past?
100 inches is a good benchmark for a snowy winter. That puts us into the top 10, and that's with 100 years of record. So a top 10% snowfall, no matter where you are, is pretty noteworthy. And, you know, it's only April 10th. We still have just a few more inches will put us maybe into the top 5 or 6.
And from what I can tell from the Weather Service forecast, it doesn't look like the snow's going away anytime this week. When do you think residents can expect the streets to return to the slushy, puddly breakup season that we're normally used to?
Well, the thing about April snow is there's a high sun angle. So even right now, there's a lot of black surface showing, even drive pavement, just hours after the snow stops. So so the roads are not, you know, that wintry as you would expect in January and February. But it's going to take a while to melt the snow that we have. I mean, typically this time of the year, well, 2 years ago, we melted 20 inches of snow in 8 days this time of the month. It's not going to happen this year because we're going to be cooler than normal really for the foreseeable future. And given that it's April 10th and we're expecting cool weather for the next few weeks, I would be surprised if we don't have snow on the ground as late as, say, April 24th, 25th. And if things come together just right, if there's maybe some new snow or it's even colder than expected, we could run out to the end of April, potentially.
Brian Brettschneider is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service, joining in for our regular Ask a Climatologist segment.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com. Sexual violence affects nearly every household in America. If someone you love has experienced sexual assault or abuse, it can be a lot to handle. Reach out to the National Sexual Assault Hotline today to learn how to support someone you care about. Call 1-800-656-HOPE or visit rain.org. That's rain.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
Despite an outcry from residents in the small Prince of Wales Island town, a nearly 300-acre timber sale in and around the city of Whale Pass is poised to go forward. After months of advocating for changes to the plan, residents are now worried about what their town will look like once cutting begins. KRBD's Regan Miller reports.
Whale Pass is a quiet town, tucked out of the way on the northern tip of Prince of Wales Island. It's a good place to escape the hustle and bustle of larger communities. James Greeley lives in town.
People are coming to Whale Pass to get away from all that for fishing adventures and such.
The city's 100-some residents hunt and fish and rely on natural resources. But Greeley expects an upcoming 292-acre timber sale to change a lot about his town. Greeley says he's concerned log trucks will clog up the only road in and out of town and bring this quiet community a steady stream of mechanical noise. He says he's concerned the planned clear cut on a hillside overlooking town could also hurt the town's status as a destination for fishermen and other tourists. And he's also worried about what it will do to residents' way of life. There are concerns about how the clear cut might affect fish and deer habitat, even though the state's best interest finding dismissed those concerns. The sale could become final later this month, and residents who live on the hillside worry that their houses will face landslides, floods, and strong winds. Greeley lives in one of those houses, and he can see the orange tape marking the clear-cut boundary from his kitchen window.
Will I be able to walk my dog again?
The state's Division of Forestry is conducting the sale. Southeast Area Forester Greg Staunton says he expects the hillside to recover quickly.
It's been quite a while since they'd seen a cleared hillside in their view shed, but it will be similar to what they're already looking at in probably 5 to 10 years' time.
Staunton says his division listened to the outpouring of opposition for the sale, specifically how close the boundary comes to some homes, but he says it just wasn't feasible to push it back.
We approached the design of the sale with a perspective that we wanted to maximize that footprint for the intended purpose of the land base, which is for forest management.
But Staunton says the plan does incorporate wildlife corridors to minimize the impact on deer and fish. Katie Rooks is a policy analyst for the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council. She thinks the most surprising thing about the sale is that despite how much criticism it received, it's still moving forward. The Division of Forestry published its land use plan last week.
But I think after the, moving appeals by the people of the town, I think we were just shocked at the lack of empathy. This is public land, and the public overwhelmingly responded in opposition to this sale.
Greeley heads up the group Friends of Whale Pass, which has led local opposition to the sale. He submitted several written comments and proposals to the division and participated in the hearing process.
It's just very frustrating and very disappointing.
Greeley feels like the state ignored Whale Pass.
From my first comment was basically they're just saying, shut up and take it. So I guess that's what we have to do.
If a request for reconsideration is not filed, the sale will be made final on April 26th. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Regan Miller.
Musicians from across Southeast Alaska will perform at the Alaska Folk Festival in Juneau this week. An event tomorrow night called Unseated will highlight artists of color. Organizer Trip Krause says it's been a long time coming. They spoke about the idea on Juneau Afternoon last week.
This was really a brainchild from 2017, my first Folk Fest. And getting to experience it. And the thing for me is being a brown kid from the Midwest in a very white area was, I didn't understand why we weren't highlighting the indigenous musicians that were here.
When Krause shared the idea on Facebook in February, painter and poet Dita Devi jumped in as a co-organizer. She said it's important to provide a dedicated space for artists of color during Folk Fest.
It was something that I think has resonated with a lot of people of all different backgrounds. The support from the community has been incredible. And I think it's something that people have been craving. They just didn't verbalize it and start to put the movement into it.
Kachung is one of the artists performing tomorrow. He said events like Unseated ensure that artists of color are heard and celebrated on their own terms.
I've been in this business for 28, almost 30 years, and performing with my band. And, we've often been that tokenized group. I mean, I can't even tell you how many times, but it's basically a career filled with that. And so one of the things that became very apparent with my peers in the industry is that we need to just create those spaces ourselves.
Unseated begins at 8 p.m. Tuesday night at The Alaskan. Admission is free. Sixteen Nome Elementary School students in Sandy Keller's cultural education class braved minus 16 degree temperatures to ice fish at the small boat harbor. They were there to learn the meaning of giving back to elders. KNOM's Greg Knight reports on how the outing on the ice teaches students about Alaska Native values and respect.
Ice fishing, or manocking, as it's known in the Yupik language, is a tool Keller uses to teach her students about sea ice, ecology, and subsistence fishing. After each ice fishing session, as part of teaching cultural knowledge and respect, Keller's students bring their catch to the local senior center to share with elders. One of the students on the ice Wednesday was second grader Cannon Lewis. He explained why he likes to fish for the elders in Nome.
To be kind and nice. It's important to me because I like to share and I like to catch fish.
Keller shared the real-world lessons each student is taught when on the ice.
They're learning the traditional way of providing food on the table. Today's catch is going to go to the elders, which is also a Nupak value as well.
While there were only 16 students on the ice this week, Keller says hundreds of students at NES were able to make manocking sticks this year in school.
All of them, about 330 students, made manock sticks, ice fishing sticks, and they made them themselves. They measured the soft wire, they counted the fishing line 25 times to get a roughly around 20 feet of line.
Brianna Piscoya's son, Ethan Piscoya, was on the ice on Wednesday. She says she encourages the lessons learned while ice fishing, and one in particular.
I think this is really wonderful for them to be out here ice fishing and like getting out in the outdoors. I also think it's a great thing for patience, as we are all learning right here.
The class has taken part in ice fishing numerous times each school year. Keller, the cultural educator at Nome Elementary School, is set to retire later this year after 17 years with the district. Reporting in Nome, I'm Greg Knight.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Sabine Pooks in Kenai, Eric Stone and Reagan Miller in Ketchikan, Chris Clint in Anchorage, Katie Anastas in Juneau, and Greg Knight in Nome. Our audio engineer tonight is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky is our producer, and I'm Wesley Early. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips Alaska, building the next generation of Alaska's workforce through investments in education and vocational training to provide jobs right here at home. ConocoPhillips Alaska.
And by
the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein online at lbblawyers.com.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.